Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest podcast. I'm your host, Eric Kane, alongside Brent Hubbs and Rob Lewis here today. As always, big thank you to our friends Exterior Home Solutions for making this coverage possible. 865-524-5888. You can pick up the phone and give them a free call for a free estimate. Or you can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Local and trusted since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. Got a lot going on this week. Of course, Tennessee basketball is the main storyline as the Volunteers get ready for the SEC tournament coming off the regular season letdown against Kentucky. But also, you know, a lot of hardware rolling in as well. Dalton Connect, most of note, as he is, you know, considered one of the best basketball players in college across the country. But also getting ready for the NCAA tournament. Tennessee baseball is getting ready for conference play. And, of course, spring practice is on the docket a week from today. Rob Lewis, it was a letdown. You don't want to lose on senior day to Kentucky, but Kentucky is capable of beating anybody in the country the way they played on Saturday. Doesn't take away from anything Tennessee did this season. Dalton Connect, a career-high 40 points, and Tennessee finishes that two-week stretch heading into the conference tournament with a 3-1 record. If you told anybody that a month ago, they would take it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way it ended up going down, like you said, it was anticlimactic. But, you know, I think if 3-1, everybody probably assumed that loss would be at Alabama, or the most likely loss would be at Alabama. And just to clinch it on Wednesday and, you know, still have that game left against your biggest rival, Kentucky, on Saturday, it was just, you know, it just had a weird feeling. And so I wasn't surprised that, you know, Tennessee kind of struggled, you know, early on. You know, Coach Barnes, you know, was pretty emphatic that he thought they were too emotional, you know, before the game with all the senior day stuff, the, you know, the SEC title stuff. And Kentucky was hungry. Kentucky played great. You know, Tennessee played a lot better in the second half offensively, but Kentucky still scored 52 points. And, you know, the Wildcats are playing better than they are. They're healthier. You know, Wagner played in Knoxville, you know, fouled out. Wasn't that effective, but I mean, they had more bodies. You know, big guys are healthy. So Kentucky's a better team than the one Tennessee beat, you know, in Lexington early this year. But like you said, Eric, it doesn't take away from what they accomplished. I mean, the regular season is an absolute, you know, slog. I think, you know, Coach Barnes, I don't think he's the only guy that has the opinion in this league that this is the best the league has been, you know, I don't know about ever, but certainly in a long, long time. Lots of NCAA tournament teams in this league, lots of big-time coaches. So, you know, weird, just kind of a weird way that it ended, you know, on a down note. But at the same time, you have to celebrate the fact that, you know, they're the SEC champions in what may be the toughest league in the country.
Rob, when you look at this team, I mean, obviously Kentucky shot the lights out. How much of that was Kentucky played really well? How much was Tennessee did not have the defensive edge and straight line drives? Is that your biggest concern with this team defensively as you get ready to move towards, you know, the one and done approach? I mean, you're out of the grind now that, you know, you're into, if you don't take care of business, you go home. So it's a different mentality. What do you take away defensively from Tennessee?
Man, I just don't worry that much about it, Hubbard, because, I mean, there is legit – I mean, I'm not an expert on every team in the country, but nobody can throw three guys at you like Reed Shepard, Dillingham, and Antonio Reeves. And that's – that. I mean, you think about that. I mean, that's maybe two top 10, you know, draft picks in Shepard and Dillingham. Some people would tell you top five. So I just – to me, it was way more about Kentucky than about having any big concerns about Tennessee. Now, Tennessee didn't play great on defense, don't get me wrong. But, you know, there just aren't many teams out there that can throw that kind of personnel, you know, at you. And those guys, you know, they got hot. Tennessee let them get some swagger. And, you know, they shot 50-something percent in the second half. I mean, Tennessee, like I said, Tennessee had a great comeback. They scored 52 points in the second half after scoring 29. In the first, but, you know, they let Kentucky score the same amount. They didn't make up any ground. So I'm not a good defensive day. I'm not trying to say that, but man, Kentucky is really good on that end of the court. And, you know, they put 92 on Tennessee when Tennessee beat them. So, you know, that's a really talented offensive basketball team.
Yeah, a lot of Kentucky fans wondering why this team didn't win the regular season, right? It took them, it's taken them a while to get healthy and get all their parts going. They're playing, they played well on Saturday. The question is, can they do anything consistently for a 2 or 3 week stretch? Which is,
can they defend consistently? Is the question with them? Because I mean, that offensively, they are really talented.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And yet, Tennessee still had a shot to tie the basketball game up with 11 seconds to play or
10 seconds left, wide open.
It was
wide open three in the corner from a 5th-year senior. So
all right, so now, I mean, for some fans, the narrative is now they don't have enough scoring. They don't have enough weapons. It's a real problem. My contention is, look, you know who they are, right? Their big three has to show up. Connect's got to score. You need every point he could score for you. And Jonas and Zakai Ziegler have to play. That's my takeaway from this basketball team. Outside of that, offensively, point totals from guys feel like it's gravy. Is that fair or not fair, Rob?
No, I'm with you. I've been saying it. You can go back and look and written it. Me and you, we've been talking about it. You know, just it's not, you know, Josiah and Santi are the fourth and fifth options on this team. I mean, the guys that, you know, Connect's got to do his thing. I think it's super important that Jonas do his thing. And Zakai's got to be a first team, you know, he's got to play like an all conference point guard, which he is, in my opinion. But he can't, you know, if Tennessee is really going to be special, then, you know, he can't have one of those off nights where, you know, however, I know you had the statistics were, you know, the difference in his play and in Tennessee's losses and their wins, both he and Jonas, but you know, really dramatic in the correlation to those guys needed to play well. And yes, to your point, I think it's gravy if you get something from Josiah, you know, Santi at this point in time. You know, I feel for him. I really, really do. A guy that's had as much success as he has had, but man, he just doesn't look like he has any confidence, you know, right there. As far as his shot, now he's still making a lot of winning basketball plays, steals, you know, finding, you know, ways to snake in and get, you know, get a rebound and create a possession for Tennessee. But man, he just doesn't look like a guy that is even looking at the basket. You know, he hasn't hit a shot in Tennessee's last two games. And Jordan Ganey, you know, same thing. That's if you're getting offense from him, it's gravy, but it's got to be three guys who are putting up the most points. They've got to show up, those three dudes.
Rob, moving forward now, it's almost, yeah, you know, I've heard a couple of people say that maybe Tennessee controls its own destiny from here on out. And if so, what's that mean? You leave the weekend still as on the number one seed line, according to ESPN's Joe Lenardi, which is not everything, but, you know, a bracketologist. It's more like Tennessee's battling with North Carolina now and still with Arizona for that Final Four. But going into the SEC tournaments, in order for Tennessee to, and I know it's not the end of the world, 1 versus 2, but what does Tennessee, in your opinion, need to do in terms of, I guess, holding on to that one line? Do you need to win? Do you need to play to Sunday? Do you need to win two games? What's that look like for you? And really for Tennessee, of course, you want to win every single game you play, but what do you need to get out of this SEC tournament heading into the NCAA tournament?
I mean, I think main, you know, super simple, but you want to get out healthy. Yeah. And, you know, I just don't think it's a big deal. I mean, I don't pretend to know how they're going to view the tournament. Clearly, you know, a couple of years ago when Tennessee won the whole thing, it didn't help them. Now, was that only because the SEC plays on Sunday? You know, I don't know. I would think that you could be a little flexible, you know, if you were actually going to put some emphasis on who won the tournament, then, you know, I would think it would be possible to slide somebody up or down a seed line, even if the game was on Sunday. So this is just my opinion because you can't never tell, you know, how they view the conference tournaments. Just avoid what would be, you know, kind of a bad loss on Friday. That would give a lot of attention. I mean, if it ends up being Auburn that you play on Saturday, that, you know, that's not going to be a loss that people could say, oh, that's a terrible loss or anything like that. In North Carolina, I can't remember exactly what the bracket looks like. Hubbard, what they have to win two games to even have a chance at getting a quad one win, do they not?
Yeah, I think in that league where it's at, I mean, you know, it's fascinating to me. And part of this for me is because Tennessee's not been in this situation, Rob. So I haven't followed it this close. I don't remember many years where there's this great debate on who the last number one seed is. Typically, when you go into conference tournaments, it feels like to me, and again, I haven't followed it close because Tennessee's not been in that conversation, but it feels like the number ones have already been set. I mean, is this really that different of a year where there's three clear-cut number one seeds, right? We've got UConn, Houston, and Purdue. They're locks for number ones. How many years is it that there's really three teams vying for the final number one seed? I don't know that we've had many years like this, which is why now suddenly you got a bracketologist who's, you know, looking for, you know, plenty of people to talk about what they talk about. It's saying now it's a three-team race for a number one seed. It just doesn't feel like a normal year in that regard to me. So I don't know how they're going to view this.
Yeah, man, I guess I just don't understand the computer numbers, because to me, I mean, what Tennessee's done in the SEC in conference play is not even so far above and beyond, you know, winning the ACC or the Pac-12 this year in years where those conferences just, you know, are nothing special at all.
Yeah, ACC's not what it used to be, that's for sure.
No, you know, same for, you know, the Pac-12 and, you know, Arizona with a couple of, I mean, Washington State's a ranked team, but I mean, they got, Arizona's got swept by them. They got a, you know, beaten, you know, some other, you know, suspect losses in that league, not, you know, USC most recently. I just, to me, Tennessee, what Tennessee has done in the conference, in this league, when you look at Kentucky, Alabama, you know, Florida, Auburn, the quality of opponents that they've beaten, and in the case of Alabama, swept. I just don't get it. I think it's pretty cut and dry. But again, I guess I just don't understand all the computer numbers.
So Tennessee's going to enter the SEC tournament. It will take on, as you see from the bracket right there, if you're watching on our YouTube channel, we'll take on the winner of LSU and Mississippi State on Friday. That's the 8-9 matchup. And then if you win there, you're going to take on likely Auburn on Saturday. But, you know, we'll see how it all plays out. Selection Sunday is coming up on Sunday of this weekend, and we'll see exactly where Tennessee is positioned to begin its run through the NCAA tournament.
Rob, also, I mean, just big picture SEC, you look at those Saturday potential matchups where the four number one seeds are. I don't know if there's any lay down into that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I think this Saturday stuff, even the Friday stuff, in this league for this tournament, it's going to be pretty wild to watch. If Auburn and South Carolina play each other, I guess that's the Friday game, right? I mean,
yeah. That'll be after Tennessee.
I mean, that's a heck of a matchup. I mean, that's not a laydown. I think, you know, in a lot of previous years, you've had teams where you say, okay, they're going to be there Saturday. They're going to be there Sunday. I'm not sure you can look at the four top seeds and say, hey, they're a cakewalk into the Saturday semis. The semis could be awesome on Saturday because it's the top four seeds. I think this league's got a different vibe to it. I mean, Florida, down there where they're sitting at, I don't know if anybody wants to play them, right?
No, I was looking at the bracket yesterday, and I think there's potential for havoc. I mean, heck, you mentioned the Friday games and Mississippi State. They've beaten Tennessee this year. I mean, they're not going to concede anything if they play Tennessee on Friday afternoon. And, you know, Mississippi State might need to win it to get in. I mean, they're taking anything for granted. They've lost some bad ones, but I think there's really some potential for havoc in the bottom of that bracket. You know, Texas A&M has been all over the map. They could get hot and beat Kentucky on Friday. Florida has took Alabama to overtime with Tuscaloosa. They could win that game. I just think anything could happen in the bottom of that bracket. And, you know, like you mentioned, South Carolina and Auburn, that'll be a war Friday afternoon. I mean, Tennessee should be a pretty solid favorite over here where they play, but that won't be a laydown. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of good teams. I mean, we talk about how much better the league is, and when you start talking about the matchups that you might see on Friday and Saturday, you're talking about a lot of teams that are going to be in the NCAA tournament field.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. And A&M may be the most desperate team out of that group, you know, in terms of need and win. I guess Mississippi State, but I mean, where are those teams at in terms of getting in? They need to make a bit of a run. I mean, A&M can make some noise. They found their footing the last 2 weeks. I don't know. I think Friday is going to be pretty fascinating in Nashville. As competitive of a Friday as we've seen that tournament. And, Rob, you've seen that tournament a lot. There have been some dogs on those quarterfinal games for a while.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Friday may give Jimmy Dykes the vapors.
Should be fun to watch, though.
Absolutely. It should be really fun to watch.
I mean, and again, I mean, I hope the conference tournament does mean something. for seeding, because I think the SEC can make a strong case for themselves for some seeding and getting some people in if you pay attention to Friday. I mean, if you're the SEC, you're hoping that the conference tournament matters because some guys can help, can clearly help themselves. Because you got a lot of quad one type games going to be played on Friday in this conference that aren't going to be played in the other big conferences.
Yep, it's a good point.
But if you're a Tennessee fan, you're just saying, I mean, what are we doing here? We're wasting our time. Let's get out of here. Let's play a game, win a game. It's almost like.
Yeah, I think that is the challenging thing. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Eric. I think, Rob, that is the challenging thing if you're Rick Barnes. I mean, competitively, you show up to play to win, right? But, I mean, the grind of 3 days, where do you want to be? Is it that big of a deal? I mean, you don't mail anything in, but, I mean, like, where do you put stock in how important the conference tournament is at this point when you're who Tennessee is?
Yeah,
right?
I may be wrong, and maybe the committee, the person wrong. I just don't think it's that big of a deal. It's really fun for fans. I mean, like the location and the setting, have just the pageantry, having all the schools in the league there. I mean, it's a big deal for fans. I mean, it should be. I don't know about big deal, but it's there's a lot of pomp and circumstance. It's a lot of fun, a lot of pageantry. But in the big picture, I just don't think it's a huge deal unless you're trying to get that auto bid or, maybe in Tennessee's case, pad your resume a little bit. But, I give Cal credit. Cal came out after the game on Saturday in Knoxville and said, well, you told me, guys, which tournament matters to me, and it's not the one next week.
Because Cal's – I mean, what are they? Where are they going to be in the national tournament? What, a 5 seed, 3 seed, 4 seed, somewhere in there?
I think a 3 or 4.
I mean, if he wins it, maybe they're a lock for a 3, but they're not going to get to a 2 seed, I don't think, if they win the tournament. I don't think they can move up that much. So, I mean, how much can he help themselves?
I mean, Nardi has him as his 10th overall seed. Could they move up to a 2? I mean, they would have to pass Creighton and Iowa State, and I will freely admit that not knowing what Creighton and Iowa State have in front of them.
Every year is different, but Tennessee did not move up a seed line after winning the tournament a couple of years ago.
Nope. And also, who did Tennessee beat? They beat Texas A&M in the championship game. They beat Kentucky on Saturday. So that
Mississippi
would have been
State on Friday, I believe.
So, I mean, the Kentucky game would certainly have been a noteworthy win.
No.
But, maybe it would be different this year because of how strong the league is. If you win it, this year, you've beaten Auburn most likely on Saturday and, either Kentucky or Bama on Sunday. So maybe that gives you a little more juice.
And again, that's taking consideration that the selection committee is actually watching and taking notes on Sunday games and not calling it a day on Saturday. So, we'll see. Rob Lewis, Grant Ramey, everybody here at VolQuest will be watching and covering Tennessee in the SEC tournament. That is coming up this weekend. Hey, want to give a quick preview of Tennessee spring practice. That's going to start a week from yesterday, so the 18th, next Monday. They're going to come back from spring practice or spring break, begin spring practice. And, we have these conversations all the time, but, I wanted to do it kind of in an overview light here. Some of the questions going into spring practice, what are you looking for? Brent, I think obviously left guard is something we're looking for. The secondary is something we're looking for. The tight end position, those are things I'm going to be looking on my checklist. But I think a lot of the conversation starts, of course, with Nico, but it's going to be a brand new secondary with every starter from last year is gone, and they're going to have to start over. They got some new guys in the group, and a lot of those guys are going to be trying to hit the ground running here the next month.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the big picture of spring practice becomes, and this is what it's become through the years, is – you want to come out of spring practice with who's above the line and who's below the line. Who do you feel like can help you and who do you feel like has got a ways to go in order to be able to help you? I don't think you're going to settle left guard in 15 practices. I don't think you're going to settle your starting five in the secondary in 15 practices. Okay. So I don't think it's about going out and winning starting jobs. I think it's about coming out of spring practice going, how competitive are we at those positions that you're looking for starters in? Right? Like, is that secondary competition, is that 7 guys that could potentially be starters, or is it 10? How competitive are you at that position? You think you got a chance to be pretty competitive, but how is that? That means, where's Jordan Matthews? Where's Christian Conyer? Right? How do these transfers settle in? What's Turrentine doing? Can Jordan Thomas stay healthy? Right? I mean, there's some guys out there who they need to have good springs to put themselves in the midst of the real competition. I think the same thing can be said at left guard, right? Okay, so you got Jackson Lampley, who's played. He's played right guard, but he could flip to left. He's a guy who knows everything, you know, in terms of what to do. Andre Kirk was hurt all last year, so where's he at? And then who's in the conversation behind those guys? Is it a two-man race, or do you come out of spring practice going, you know what, I think Sham Umarov can potentially be the left guard. I think Aiden Bussell's in the conversation at left guard, maybe Vyson Lang. Is that a two-man race or a five-man race? I think that's what this spring practice is about for me, is just what's the depth of the competition at those positions coming out of spring ball.
I would agree. It's not, you said it best. I mean, you're not going to find your starting left guard or your starting free safety or whatever, you know, coming out of spring practice. It's, can this guy help me? Can this guy help me next fall? Can this guy help me in fall camp? Because if not, it's not like you're going to give up on him, but it's like, okay, well, I need to know who's going to be helping me next fall. And I'm going to find a lot of that out right here. Maybe not the starter or how many snaps you're going to play, but are you going to be a player? Okay. And that kind of formulates how you're going to enter fall camp, in my opinion. And also, I mean, it's important. Anytime you're getting reps, anytime you're getting live reps, you're seeing the speed of the game, it's important. That's why I think the spring practice is obviously important for Nico. Not just being the quarterback of the team, Brent, but he's now the leader of the football team. Not just leading his huddle, leading the offense, he's the leader of the football team. There's a lot that comes with that, and you just need to get some reps on top of reps on top of reps. And so this will be the first time that it's truly him being the guy. I know he started the bowl game, but still he had Joe over his shoulder and everything. It's his time to shine, and I'm intrigued to see how that process goes for him over the next 5 weeks as being the guy for Tennessee, especially with all the outside noise going on and how he's in the center of it and all that. You know, how does he block all that out and go to work? Does he do that? I'm intrigued to see over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Well, I don't think there's anything about him outside now with everything that's taking place with the NCAA. I think that's all done. What's interesting to me about the Nico deal, Rob, is, yeah, there's some unknown there, but that's one of the reasons, and I wrote this on Monday, Nico's one of the reasons Josh Heupel's sleeping well at night. I mean, he knows who his quarterback is, and he knows the talent level of his quarterback. Unlike some other teams out there who have a transfer quarterback in, they're trying to figure out if they can win the job, if they can learn it. I mean, Josh Heupel knows and this team knows exactly who their quarterback is. He's got one game of starting experience, but there's no debate this spring about the quarterback position, which should make Tennessee be comfortable, and it should give Nico the opportunity to really grow.
Yeah, I mean, it is one game, and this might, you know, be hyperbole, but if I was Josh Heupel, I'd feel better about my quarterback position right now than I did this time last year, a year ago. And again, maybe that's one game, and maybe that's just drinking the Nico Kool-Aid with some gusto. But I think the kid has the goods. And I mean, we didn't know that Joe was, you know, going to be erratic or inconsistent at this time last year, but nobody knew. You know, I think people believe that Nico is going to be just fine with a lot more conviction than anybody felt about Joe Milton this time last year.
I see where you're coming from. Like, I understand that, because like with Joe, it was always the talent levels there, but we've seen Joe out there be inconsistent and overthrow and, you know, make poor football IQ decisions, not be consistent on the field. You know, we've seen that before this time last year, and you just had never seen Nico play, but you knew about all the potential. I can definitely see where you're coming from in that regard.
Nico's on, like, you can get Heisman odds on Nico.
Yeah.
He's played one game. Well, I mean, kind of level of talent I think that I'm talking about.
Man, what's interesting is with Joe, there was enough of a resume of evidence that created the wonder, was the Clemson game a one-off, or had he really changed? Right? That's where you were with Joe, right? Like, the Clemson game, he was really good. I mean, statistically, right? He won the MVP, and that created a lot of buzz for him. But if you covered him for 2 years, you kind of wondered, was that more of an anomaly? Was that he had a month to prepare? Was that Clemson? Was that Joe really turning the corner? There's no resume with Nico of bad, right? I mean, you think about it. You didn't see him play a whole lot last year. And then the one game he starts the Iowa game. Yeah, he got sacked a bunch, but there's nothing that you walked out of the Iowa game going, man, he's over his head. It's too much for him. There was never that vibe. So I think there's a different feeling about Nico, because with Joe, there was good Joe and bad Joe that you were sorting through. With Nico, there's just limited evidence that it's been solid, which gives you a lot of belief that moving forward, and he was highly acclaimed, and Rob, you're right, Heisman odds, you know, in the whole nine yards. So I think that changes the narrative a little bit. My point with Nico is Nico's not looking over his shoulder at anything. It's Nico's team. It's Nico's job. It's spring. Go get better. And I think that Josh Heupel ought to feel better or feel good that he's going into spring practice knowing who his quarterback is, and his quarterback's got a ton of talent. Now, it's on Nico, it's on Josh and the staff to continue to develop that talent and grow him in this offense. But it's not like you got a jalapa or a gremlin that you're taking to the field to drive around, right? This guy's a sports car, right? You just got to get him, you got to get him dialed in. I think that's a different vibe than it is when you're not sure what you have, you know, coming off your car lot, so to speak, for a really bad analogy, if you're wondering.
We can go on and on talking about this football team. I do want to hit one more position real quick before we change gears here. Again, spring practice starting on Monday. We'll be out there to see the practice viewing periods and 2-minute drills, and we'll hear from Josh Heupel on Monday and so on and so forth leading up to the Orange and White game. I'm really intrigued about this offensive line for a number of reasons. Obviously, left guard, as we mentioned. The flip from John Campbell to left tackle to right tackle, what's that going to look like? Lance Hurd, he was so highly touted as a prospect, but just didn't really have a spot because LSU was pretty good up front. But is it because he couldn't break through over there? Is that why he left? I mean, I want to see Lance Hurd. I want to see how good he is. And I expect a lot of quote-unquote maintenance days or, you know, take-it-easy days for some veterans in the spring, as you see sometimes, you know, Cooper Mays, Javonte Spraggan still recovering from an injury and all that. But more than anything, Rob, it's – and we talk about it all the time. I mean, who are some of these guys that can step up and be solid depth pieces? I mean, Jackson Lampley and Dane Davis played a lot last year. Ollie Lane has been that guy. He's out of the program now. You know, Vice and Lang, Sham. I mean, who are some of these other guys who you can actually count on to maybe step up and be a player in 2025? Or if something were to happen, you wouldn't be scrambling trying to figure it out. This spring practice is huge for that group of guys, both offensive line and defensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I think Hubbard said it best, you know, a couple minutes ago, this above the line, below the line. When you leave spring practice, do you have a, you know, good idea of who can help you? And it's, you know, it's I don't know, big spring. It's an important spring for, you know, some of those redshirt freshmen, you know, linemen, you know, Aiden Bustle, Bison Lang, who we've talked about a lot that because of the depth at center, Masai Reddick. I mean, can these guys help you? Brian Grant, you're going to find out, you know, in the next few weeks, you know, probably get a good crack at that. Those guys are going to get a lot of reps. You know, they very short on experience. And you're right, Eric. I mean, who can be, you know, somebody that is a depth piece, because that's a position where you're almost always going to need some, and not just a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you get down specifically with that, and I think it's a good point, a good question, Eric, and I agree with you 100%, Rob, but when you get specific, I think in this offense you can find some ways to manage your offensive line with the exception of the center position. And I think when you zero in on priorities coming out of this spring, as much as it is to try to find a left guard, it may be more important or just as important to find a true backup center. Because what they put themselves into last year with having to move Ollie Lane basically 2 weeks before the opener and say, hey, become a center. And by the way, we want you in your second start to go to Florida and win. With what all the center has to do, that's a big ask. Yeah. I mean, really big. Now, they spent all last spring trying to get Addison Nichols to be the center, and it didn't work. They do not need to come out of this spring going, well, we're going to go into August, and we still got to try to figure out who might be the backup center. Like, to me, if finding a left guard is priority one, 1B is finding a backup center, because you can't function without a backup center. And they've got to find somebody who can play that position. I think that's imperative for Glenn Ellerbe and Josh Heupel to spring.
And we've had this conversation since Cooper was the backup center.
Well, and again, it's been a luxury to have Cooper as your guy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you got two things going on. One, he ain't going to be here in 25. And two, Rob, you learned last year, you better have somebody who can step in there and play that spot. And you don't want it to be on the job training. And again, I'm not critical of Ollie Lane in the least. What they asked him to do was hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'll tell you to this day, he went to Florida and his head was swimming pretty big when he went to Florida. I mean, you just can't put yourself in that situation. I mean, you gotta have some depth. You gotta have somebody you believe in behind Cooper Mays coming out of spring practice.
And Hubbard, to back up your point about, you know, them being able to do some things to help in other positions outside of center. I mean, what they averaged 200 plus yards rushing in the SEC last year, and how many guys off that line are drafted? I mean, in this draft, I mean in this league, those aren't fake numbers once you've done it, you know, over a season.
Yeah. And again, with the run game, I think a really good back can make an average offensive line look pretty good. You know, I think, and I'm not saying the offensive line was bad, so I don't want to hear that on the message board.
No, they just weren't great.
I'm just saying from a production standpoint, they were terrific. I think you got to factor the back into that in the run game, because a really good back can make an offensive line, you know, really productive. And I think you got to give Jalen Wright credit for what he did last year. It's why he was a chance to be the number one running back taken in the draft, you know, somewhere in the late second round, mid to late second round, potentially. My point is you can piecemeal it, Eric, in some different spots on the offensive line, with exception of center. Mm-hmm. Center's hard just to throw a guy in there. That's why you got to find some kind of center this spring. And I'm not saying you shut Cooper Mays down, but you better focus more on finding his backup for next year and his replacement for the future than you are working on Cooper Mays, you know, in 11-on-11 settings, because you got to find an answer there.
100%. You do not want to be the second week of fall camp and unable to go 11-on-11 or team because you don't have a center who can snap a football. That's where you were last year. Yep. I mean, that's for a day or that's where you were. And then you go to a fifth-year veteran, six-year veteran, and say, Ollie Lane, you snapped before, right? Slide down. And you roll. Dane Davis, have you ever snapped before? Middle school? Okay, come over here. You're going to do it now. I mean, that's what Tennessee did. And, again, you've not had a backup center since Cooper Mays was your backup center in 2020. 100%, I think you need to make that a priority and figure it out for sure. So that's something we'll look forward to in spring practice. We'll get a quick word in, a late word in from our friends over at Exterior Home Solution, and come back and give a little baseball recap from the weekend. But first, here's our friends Exterior Home Solutions.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
This episode is brought to you by Funnables. Funnables aren't just fruit snacks. Every bite your child takes is fuel to spark their imagination, taking them from a wild unicorn space mission to a deep sea dive into a rainbow river. Funnables are made with 7.1% real fruit puree and are an excellent source of vitamins A, C, and E. So anytime, any place, make snack time playtime with Funnables fruit snacks. Have fun, eat it too. Visit FunnablesSnacks.com to shop now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks to our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. Be sure and give them a call for any of your outdoor needs, whether you need windows, decking, you need a new roof, whatever. You can check them out, exteriorhomesolutions.com, or give them a call today, 865-524-5888. Talking some Tennessee baseball here. The Volunteers on a heater continue to win, continue to roll along. One midweek game this week before you open SEC play. Eric, I've got a couple of questions I want to ask before we get out the door here. We'll get to the pitching question in the weekend rotation in just a minute as you go into SEC play. My bigger question is, I don't understand the whole Blake Burt deal with the ejection and this quick pitch and whatever sportsman, gamesmanship, lack of gamesmanship. What was that? Put that into some context, because I got Tony's answer. I read it, but he was a little bit, I think he was trying to calculate his words and almost tied himself into some knots in some of his responses. Break that down and explain to me what in the heck happened on that deal.
Yeah, Tony was trying really hard to not go off there when we were asking him about it, because he was extremely frustrated. And when the camera stopped rolling, he told us how extremely frustrated he was. Essentially what it was, it's quick pitch, okay? And he even said that he's not trying to call the other guy out because his pitchers have been guilty of it too. He said it's been a fad 5-6 years in the last couple of years that, you know, players are doing that. And in my opinion, if you're in the box, I don't care if you have your hand up. If you're in the box, you're in the box. Be ready to swing the bat. That's my opinion. But that's kind of what it was. The very first at bat of the day in the bottom of the first inning, Christian Moore was standing in there and he got quick pitch and he was kind of threw his hand up like, what's going on? Then it happened a couple other times, happened to Dean Curley. And then finally, Cal Starr gets up there. He's the catcher for Tennessee, obviously. And he's sitting over there talking to the catcher and telling him what he thinks about that. And that's when both benches got worn. So just like in football, you get an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. If you get one more, you're gone. Both benches were worn. And so later in the game, when Blake Burke hit his home run and he came around and trotted around, you know, the home plate, he said something to the catcher. Then the umpire, you know, rung him up. So Tony, and I agree with this, he said, I don't agree with Blake Burke, you know, telling, what a great line from Tony, telling the catcher where his ball landed. He's a smart enough guy. He saw it. He can figure it out. But he doesn't agree with how they got to that point, essentially the warnings, because he thinks someone's going to get hurt. Someone, someone can get hit in the face if they're not looking, you know, and that's what quick pitching is sometimes. And he said, before you worry about bat flips, why don't you worry about taking quick pitching out of the game? So that was kind of his call to action there after the game. Blake Burke is kind of collateral damage in this. Sure, he mouthed off and everything. He'll get run and he'll get a nice little day off against Eastern Kentucky, but he'll be back and ready to go for Alabama. But Tony Vitello was not happy with that whole situation, obviously, after the game against Illinois.
Yeah, Rob, you see, if I was UBC, I would have flipped my bat because I would like that day off against Eastern Kentucky if I was in your shoes.
Yes.
You know, I think college baseball has an interesting predictment. I really do. And this is a bit off. But now you're getting ready to get into conference play. And we know how intense the SEC is in conference play, right? I mean, it's heated. I mean, it's a warfare every weekend. I mean, it's war every weekend with these guys. Baseball is like college baseball feels like they don't know what to do, right? Like you want guys to have some fun, but now you can't have too much fun and guys have taken fun too far. But like bat flips are a part of every game. So now we're making this, I feel like this thing has gotten so muddled in terms of what are the umpires going to let you do, not let you do. It almost feels like they made it worse by taking the props out of the deal. Right. Cause to me, like the props were about the team.
Yeah.
Like the fur coat and the daddy hat didn't really show up the other team when Tennessee was doing that. Now you got bat flips and you're mouthing and this, and look, everybody's done that. Todd Helton mouthed when he hit a home run. Okay. I mean, that's just part of it. Now we're taking it to a different extreme that I think is making the game even harder for umpires. Like, I'm not sure what you're supposed to do when you get into these conference games where the intensity is just going to be off the charts. Maybe that's just me. I think they're making it harder in some ways than it should be.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's a tough job, obviously. Rob, go ahead.
All right.
It's a tough job if you're an umpire and you're that crew. I 100% agree. And you're right. The props were all about celebrating with the team. And they still have the props. They just got to keep them in the dugout. That's why you see every fur coat picture that Tennessee releases is in the dugout, because that's where you got to have it. But, I mean, you got guys that hit a walk-off grand slam, I think, earlier this season for Grand Canyon. And the dude got ejected after a walk. It was something like that, like a walk-off right. grand slam for showing too much emotion. Chase Burns in his pitching lab at Wake Forest over the weekend, granted, career high 14 strikeouts. Dude's talented. Sixth inning going off like he just, you know, was in Southern Miss winning the regional. It's like, you know, what's going on there? I mean, it's an emotional game. I get all that. But,
I mean, listen, don't get me wrong. There's got to be some parameters, right? I mean, you don't flip birds when you hit a home run.
No, you shouldn't.
You know, I mean, you got to keep, and Tony's right. Some of that you got to know when you got to calm down a little bit. It's just, I hate that the storyline in college baseball has become about ejections and bat flips and, you know, that type of thing. Because I think the sport's been on a heater. It's been growing. It's been going well. Of course, Tennessee fans are paying much more attention than they've ever paid to it. But I don't know. I think that, you know, trying to be the fun police is always a risky business, I think, when you're asking them to do everything else that you're asking them to do in terms of managing a game. So we'll see what happens with that. All right, let's get to the real story here. And that is, what's Tennessee like? Where's Tennessee? They won a bunch of games. This non-conference schedule hadn't been very good, okay? I mean, Illinois is not a very good team. Albany State was bad. You know, they brought in some – Bowling Green, bad. I mean, they brought in some bad teams to play here in non-conference. So where is this team, Eric, going into conference play overall, and where are they in terms of their pitching staff moving into the SEC?
Yeah, I wrote about in the 3-2-1 yesterday. You know, Tony was asked about it post-game Sunday, like how good do you typically know your team is at this point before you're going into SEC play? And he's like, hey, I think this team can compete and win a lot of games in the SEC, but I don't truly know until we start playing. And I don't think anybody knew that Tennessee would start off 5-10 last year in conference play until they actually did. My point is, I think I like this team a lot. Offense is going to carry this team. I mean, go – if you're listening to this and you're a Tennessee baseball fan and you maybe not keep up with the stats a lot, go pull up the season stats for Tennessee's lineup 1-9. All but two of the regular players, top 11 players or whatever, are hitting over 300. I mean, the offense is fun and exciting. I think Tennessee has one of the best top of the orders, 1-5, in all the country, to be completely honest with you. So I think that's been a whole lot of fun. Defense has been much better than I thought it would be. Now, they're going to make errors every now and again. That's part of the game. But I think defensively, so far, they've been better. I like the options at starting pitching. I do. Still don't have a set plan, but I like the options. My questions lie in the bullpen, and I think you're going to see exactly who does what role in the Tennessee bullpen, you know, starting this week. You know, bullpen really hadn't been tested much so far to begin this season, outside of Texas Tech, outside of Oklahoma, and maybe, you know, High Point and a couple other games here and there. We're going to see exactly who does what and what role. As far as pitching, you know, we'll see about A.J. Russell. I think that A.J. Russell will make his return this week at some point. Would not shock me later this evening if he gets an inning or two against Eastern Kentucky, just to get his toes wet a little bit. I do not think that A.J. Russell is going to start on Friday and pitch seven innings and have 100 pitches on his pitch count. I don't think you're there yet. So I think A.J. Causey is going to roll into to conference play as your Friday starter. I think Drew Beam's going to be on Saturday. And then say A.J. Causey, you know, pitches an inning or two on Tuesday and it all goes well. Do you want him to open the Sunday game in the bullpen behind him? You know, we'll see. When he gets built back up, Brent, that's where the conversation begins. It's, well, A.J. Causey's been fantastic. Do you want to leave him on Friday nights? Drew Beam's not going anywhere. Do you want to have A.J. Russell on Sunday? You know, Nate Snead's still a guy that's proven that he can start games. Again, I like the options for the starting rotation, but the key is to get A.J. Russell back 100% healthy and ready to go, and he's going to begin that journey on the mound, I would imagine, sometime on Tuesday, but this week for sure.
All right, so we'll see what Tennessee looks like. Obviously, you're going into the gauntlet. The SEC is the SEC, which is the best conference in college baseball. So the task is here. You know, you're experimenting is over, so to speak. You've got an identity of who you are in the field. You've got to find a couple of answers, as Eric just laid out for you, in the pitching rotation. So we'll find out exactly what this baseball team looks like. This weekend will not determine whether or not they go to Omaha. They're going to lose. As Tony Vitello said, we're going to lose some baseball games. You're not going to win them all. It is a marathon, not a sprint. Everybody should keep that in mind when they lose a conference game, because they're not going to go sweeping through the conference slate. And that's just part of it. So we'll see where this baseball team is as they hit the road to open SEC play on Friday against Alabama. Eastern Kentucky coming up later tonight. Full coverage of Tennessee baseball from Eric Kane. If you're not listening to the Porch podcast, you're missing out on a lot of details of what's going on with Tennessee baseball. It's a fantastic listen, so I encourage you to listen to that and check that out as well. That comes up every Thursday night into Friday to get you ready for the weekend slate. Every Tuesday and every Thursday, we have the VolQuest podcast. It's the regular Tuesday podcast. The mailbag comes up every Thursday as well. So get those questions in later this week. We'll address those in the Thursday edition of the podcast presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. Be sure and like this, subscribe, and obviously check us out at VolQuest.com. Tons and tons of stuff going on right now. Baseball, basketball, football getting cranked up next Monday. That's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. He is Eric Kane, Rob Lewis. I'm Brent Hubbs. Thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.